coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thung and Galactic Greetings, Earthlets. I am your host, Mol Char, and welcome to the latest edition of the 2000 AD Thrillcast Lockdown Tapes. Now, this week we are not focusing on 2000 AD exactly, but the Tammy and Jinty special is out in a week's time, and I talked to two of the creators, Rachel Smith and Ram Z, about their stories for this continuing revival of two of the key girls titles from the 70s and 80s. Now, obviously, this is something that we've talked about before on the podcast. We've had recordings of panels. The girls comics of the period were big sellers at the time, and also had an incredible variety of storytelling in them. The Treasury of British Comics has been reprinting some of these titles, such as The Land of No Tears, Fran of the Floods. We've got Sugar Jones and Concrete Surfer coming up soon as well. So this was an opportunity to actually look ahead, rather than focus on collections of older stories. This is a brand new special with two stories in it: Boarding School and The Return of Catgirl. Both very different, but at the same time plugging into that legacy a little bit of girls' comics. And it was a delight to be able to talk to Rachel and Ram Z. Tammy and Jinty special is imminent. Let's start off by introducing you both.
I'm Rachel Smith. I write and draw comics. Although for this issue of Tammy and Jinty, I'm just the writer. I self-publish a lot of my own comics, as well as have them published by other people. I worked for Titans Doctor Who for a little while. What else might people know? I'm doing quarantine comics at the minute, every day. And yeah, been making comics for about 8 years, I think, I worked out the other day. So.
Been very much enjoying the quarantine comics.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. They're keeping me sane.
Ramsey, what about you?
I'm Ramsey. I'm an indie comics creator from South London. I've been doing it for 5 years, like tabling, putting my comics in shops, worrying about the bleed, the way you put the comics in and that kind of stuff. So this is like my first pro comics writing gig, and I'm loving it. Yeah, I know. I feel like when I found out that Rachel was on it, I felt like I was sort of like the support act in this. I was like, no. Oh my God, I'm back in the Rolling Stones.
No way, man.
But it's really cool. It's really cool, man. I'm digging it.
I mean, out of all of us, you've got the most appropriate background on Zoom.
Yeah. Keeping it retro, digging it.
So, in this new special, we've got Boarding School. Mm-hmm. Wait, sorry, I was looking at my notes, which says something completely different. Just the name Memoir, and it confused me. We've got Boarding School, and then also The Return of Catgirl, which are all excellent. Rachel, I want to come to you first to talk a little bit about Boarding School, because immediately on the first page, this feels like one of those classic Tammy and Jinty stories. Just in the setting. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how you came to be involved in the special, and what your inspirations were for your story?
Okay. To answer the first bit, I was in the first issue of Tammy and Jinty, although the first issue of the reboot of Tammy and Jinty, with a short comic. Gosh, how long was that one? Might have just been like 4 pages or something.
Yeah.
Called Duckface. And that one, you know, they must have liked it because they wanted me back. So I was thrilled that they wanted me to write something longer for this issue. Inspiration-wise, that's always my least favourite question because I've no idea. I don't know. I've always loved writing about siblings, so I knew I wanted it to be a brother and sister. And I think I just pitched a bunch of log lines to them about this brother and sister and the different settings and the different adventures they could have, and this was the one they liked the most. So,
I'm intrigued what these other log lines were, other directions this could have gone in.
I have no idea. I can barely remember the story, to be honest. It feels like such a long time ago that I wrote it.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah, right?
Well, the first thing that immediately sprung to mind, again, anybody listening, spoilers if you've not yet got your copy of Tammy Ginty Special, but the thing that immediately sprang to mind for me was The Secret Garden.
Yeah.
That notion of there being two realms and the protagonists move between them, and in doing so they open up their world in a way they didn't think possible before. I mean, that's a kind of classic setup, really, isn't it?
I think it's a very sort of fantastical idea, but with these very real people, so that, you know, they're in this very strange place, but they're still children and they're still trying to push boundaries, and they still have those, you know, they're brother and sister, so they love each other, but the sister, you know, the brother gets a lot more attention than the sister does from their guardians, and you know, she's trying to downplay the resentment that she feels about that, but the brother's a little bit younger, so he's a little bit oblivious about, you know, maybe how she feels about that. And I quite liked the mixture of putting them in this very, very strange setting, but still grounding it on kind of very, very relatable emotions.
Because boarding schools are one of those staples of girls' comics in the 70s and 80s. And I guess have actually lit a lot of British literature aimed at girls in the post-war period. Mm. I've never understood the appeal myself of the fascination of boarding schools. Was it an obvious setting for you to go to?
I've always been a little bit fascinated about boarding schools and people that went to them. I think mainly because as growing up as a kid, that would have been my worst nightmare if my mum and dad turned around and said, "Oh, actually, we're sending you to go live somewhere else. We don't want you to live with us anymore." Not that that's the way these conversations go when people go to live in boarding schools, but you know, I used to sort of think about what it would be like as a kid. And I always thought it would be pretty dreadful, but, you know, I think they can also be quite, I don't know, I think the bonds you form with friends might be a bit more, you know, a bit more sincere, a bit more, you know, they might go a bit deeper. But also, I don't know, I imagine a boarding school is like a school, but like a pressure cooker. So like, I can imagine all the bullying would be a lot worse there. All your friends group would be your lifeline and stuff. So I don't know, they have always fascinated me a little bit. Tabitha and Richard are the only kids in this boarding school, so it was a bit different for them. Mm-hmm. And because they don't know anything else, they don't realise how odd that is until Tabitha meets someone from the real world. And she realizes she's not getting brought up in the normal way.
It's always been that thing where I think particularly for comics, boarding school is or any kind of institution is a very easy way for children to be taken out of the family unit without it necessarily being a risky thing, because they're in an institution, you know, it has some semblance of normality, but certainly in your boarding school, you almost immediately subvert that.
Yeah, it's Yeah, it's not the safest place, my boarding school. I think even from the first page, you can kind of tell there's some underlying things going on that the children are a little bit unaware of. Only because we, you know, coming from the real world, know that it's not really normal how they're being brought up. That's always quite delicious, I think, when you know more about the characters, about what you're reading.
I'm interested in your writing process, about how you build a story, whether you start with an idea or whether you start with character or whether it's an amalgam of the two.
I usually always start with characters, and I don't think that was different for this one. I think I started with Tabitha and Richard. The way they are with each other and then I just kind of think I was trying to write the most interesting thing that's happened to those characters and what that would be and where that would be. And then it kind of carries on from there. Structure wise, I use a sort of mixture of the 8-point arc and the save the cat method, which is pretty much the same thing, but right, said in different ways.
For those of our listeners who aren't familiar with that, do you want to just sort of explain a little bit more on that point?
Every story is a circle. Not every story is a circle, but it's more satisfying if it is. So your character starts in a zone of comfort, but they're not happy. Mm. They want something. And then by the end of the story, they've come back to that point, and that's the easiest way of showing how much they've changed, is to put them back in the situation they were in at the beginning. Mm. The whole adventure is them going around the circle. And then the save the cat method is it's meant for films, but it works for comics as well. But that's a lot more descriptive. It's very, very, they tell you what should happen on page 15 of your screenplay and things like that, which obviously doesn't translate completely into comics, but Save the Cat is a really good book if you don't mind the slightly misogynistic way it's written. It's written a long time ago by a guy that didn't think girls could be protagonists. Into the Woods, of course. I try and read that at least once a year just to remind myself what's required of me.
Because I guess for a story like this where it is meant to be self-contained, but you've got slightly more pages to deal with than you would normally in one of our anthologies.
I still wanted it to be longer. I always write way more than I need. Yeah, I always end up having to cut it down.
But I just find it interesting how the kind of comics that we produce, you know, thinking about 2000 AD, they're hyper-compressed. This has got a bit more room to breathe, but structure is still so important when you've only got a kind of set amount of time, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
With something like comics, I mean, your experience producing your own comics, how much time do you spend thinking about structure, or do you just kind of feel your way through it along the lines that you described?
I guess once I've got the structure there and I've got my, you know, so I write all my scenes out on little bits of post-it notes and put them all up on a board. And once I've got that, I kind of don't need to think about it too much anymore. I can just let the characters do what they want now. And then maybe once more near the end, I'll just check that I've got all my beats in the right place. And that it's got that nice, satisfying, circular storytelling. But yeah, I mean, you can get really into structure and you know, your beat sheet and your 8-point arc and all this stuff. And that's really, it's really good. And it gives you, it gives you a good shape to pour your story into and to just make sure that you are telling a story and you're not sort of going, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. Oh, and now I ran out of room. I'll stop writing now. You know, and it needs some structure, but I think you can also get a bit too into it and a bit too clinical. And you have to remember that it's a story and your characters need to be having fun And there needs to be some fun and games in there as well. And if some beats get switched over, then it's not the end of the world. So it's getting that balance, I guess, between writing a story that you know works, but also writing a story that people will just love for the characters and what they're doing.
One thing I did want to talk about a little bit was, and this does come back to the talking about this, the secret garden, was what felt very much like a difference in class, as in social class, between the lead character and the, you know, I'm trying to not be too spoilery here, but between the lead character and the person that she encounters on the other side of this wall. Was that very much intentional on your part?
Yeah, I suppose I knew the more different those two characters were, and the less likely they would be to meet if they were just in the real world as in their different social classes, the more interesting that conversation was going to be. Because they hit it off right away, and I think that's really interesting, and despite the fact that they're so different. Yeah, I guess each character had more to learn from the other one, and that makes that more interesting to me, and the place at which they meet is more interesting. That was intentional.
I want to just move on to talk to Ramsey for a second. More than a second. Ramsey, tell us a little about your story, because you're in a different way to Rachel's story. You're actually dealing with an established character. Do you want to talk a little bit about your inspiration and how you approach this, dealing with Catgirl?
Well, basically, I received an email on the weekend of Thought Bubble, pitch for this, and I did a lot of research, and I stumbled across Lou Stringer's blog, where it talks about British comics, and there was this really cool series of articles he does about British comic characters that he wishes were collected in books, and Catgirl was one of them. And I was struck by the idea of, like, the setup I thought was really cool. Like, there's this girl who has this cat costume that has powers, and her dad is a detective, and they solve crimes together. And my initial pitch was like a complete reboot, where it's going to be Kathy was going to be mixed race now, and she was going to She inherited this costume from her late mother, who was like a scientist. Because I thought the initial idea of a witch doctor who gave the dad the costume was a bit old school, maybe a bit, you know, out of date there. And I thought if she was a scientist who made a costume and she died and she passed it on to her daughter, and the dad and her and her father have sort of like this Inspector Gadget type of dynamic, where he's like a bumbling detective and she's the one who solves the crime kind of thing. But Keith quite rightly said that let's make it more of an update than a complete reboot. And then I thought of the idea of making Kathy a detective who used to be Catgirl, and her daughter takes on the mantle. And I was super interested in the idea of like legacy characters, and don't really see legacy characters where it's a woman passing on a mantle to a girl. It's quite rare still, even in DC. And to make it even more interesting, like a mother-daughter sort of situation. So I thought that was quite interesting, and I lent into that direction. And also splitting the narrative in the beginning between the original Catgirl doing the we're basically splitting the narrative, so it has Kathy as a detective solving a mystery and her daughter in the superhero story. So it's a bit of like a Trojan horsing a detective story where the lead's like a 40-year-old woman. So I thought that was kind of cool, because you know, you don't see that. It's usually like John Constantine. So I thought that would be quite interesting.
With a character like Catgirl, very much in the mould of British style superheroes like the Leopard from Lime Street, where they feel so ordinary, you know, for all of the extraordinary things they do, there's a down to earthness about them. With this story, I felt you really kind of hit that nail on the head, that you know, that feeling of this is an ordinary person who is actually existing in a world not dissimilar to our own. How much was that in your mind while you were writing the script?
Well, basically, when I was approaching it, I was thinking, what's the difference between having a superhero story told in Smash compared to what you'd have in Tammy and Jinty? And I think a superhero story in Smash would be like a straight up superhero story. Well, I kind of feel like the genres that you have in Tammy and Jinty, they're kind of like almost sort of like a conduit to just talk about characters and characters' relationships. I think the genre part is secondary. So I like the idea of just doing this sort of satire about what if a Zuma kid became a superhero, and how would social media be scupper that, or be a bit problematic, and yeah, just deal with that. Like, I just thought it'd be interesting to write about a teenager today and how the world that they the social media world they live in could clash with being a superhero. And that, sorry.
No. It brings me nicely on to asking a question about social media, because it is a kind of key component of your story. And it's something that certainly I felt that superhero comics, a lot of comics, haven't really dealt with particularly well, you know, adapting to a world in which secret identities may be very difficult to maintain. How much was that just a device to spark kind of character moments, and how was that a comment on, you know, maintaining identity and authenticity, I guess, in a social media age?
Yeah, I think the whole idea of like identity is super interesting when you look at it from a social media perspective. And the dual identity of that, and the dual identity of being like a superhero and a regular person. And the idea that she went to this party as in costume, thinking, you know, it's just a regular party. And sorry, rewind. So, I thought it would be integral to that, as in, I thought it'd be quite funny to see how the social media part of it would play into the performance side of it, and how I'd also kind of dug the whole idea of like fans reacting in real time to a situation that is happening, because you'd never get that it's something so completely divorced to what superhero comics are now, but it's the world we live in. And I kind of dug that, like, I find like when you go to gigs and stuff, and like while a gig is happening, people are on their phones and commenting and sharing media and stuff like that. And I thought that would be quite interesting to put that in a superhero setting.
Because it is something that both stories acknowledge in different ways. So Rachel, you know, you've got that revelatory moment in yours where Tabitha, the main character, sees a phone for the first time, and it's kind of like I said, it's often difficult in comics for the stories to acknowledge how ubiquitous this technology is in ordinary life now, isn't it?
I also think like mobile phones can ruin a lot of stories, because it makes everything too easy. Like, if you know, there's no journeying to go and tell someone something if you can just text them. But I also, I don't know, I think it's really cute when Tabby sees the phone, because she calls it a magic box and she doesn't really understand it. It's very sweet. But I did want to acknowledge, of course, that because it makes the two worlds very different and it makes the characters very different, you know. But she's equally as fascinated by a Boots Advantage card. So everything in this new world is just fascinating to her. And, you know, I quite like that she isn't, you know, Richard is actually quite scared of all these things, but Tabitha just finds them absolutely fascinating and she wants to learn all these things about them. And yeah, I don't know. Again, it's just showing the difference in those characters.
Yeah, I mean, that is one element, and particularly in terms of Catgirl, I think, and Tabitha as well. But with Catgirl, it's both those characters for me express a kind of eagerness, willingness, ability to adapt and to learn and to grow. And that, I mean, I don't know how you feel about this, Ramsey. That for me was the essence of an awful lot of girls' comics, particularly of Tammy and Ginty, the 70s and 80s. That kind of, you know, you've got to have characters who do go on a journey, both personally, morally, you know, and beyond. With Catgirl, again, you've not got loads of pages to play with, slightly more than normal. But what was running through your mind in terms of the journey that you wanted her to go on and the change that you wanted to see in that character?
I kind of saw it as... That's a really tough question. I think it's a weird one because it's almost like this thing is... She stumbles into this thing and it's kind of brought her and her mother closer. And it's almost sort of like the social media element. It's almost like a Spider-Man type character who is basically dealing with how to work with social media in the job. Because it does cause more... I kind of like when Rachel says that, like, oh, social media can cause a problem. I totally leaned into that. I was like, okay, how's it gonna cause a problem? The villains are gonna just go on their live stream and figure out where they are. And I just really leaned into the problems that social media could have and made it part of the story. And I think by the end of the story, she sort of, I've never really thought about this. I think by the end of this story, she's sort of like, it's a weird one. I've never really thought about it. I kind of feel like, because the thing is, I read, was it The Concrete Surfer? And it's a bit like that in a sense, like this sport or this superhero event has kind of made like a timid person a bit more stronger, a bit more confident. And there was this like recently, there was a whole like Grant Morrison interview that came out recently where he was talking about like he wasn't allowed to read boys' comics or like war comics and only read girls' comics. And he was happy that he did because they lent more about character and stuff like that and how things, yeah, and how they would deal with it. And I kind of lent into that.
That's fascinating because, you know, obviously, this is the 2008 podcast, even though we concentrate on other comics as well. But, you know, you look at John Wagner, Alan Grant, Pat Mills, you know, they all had experience working on girls' comics and romance comics where the key thing was character above everything else, you know? And Ginty was, I guess, slightly unusual because it was themed, you know? There was... You had sci-fi stories, which was a relative rarity. But I kind of want to ask you both about the legacy of quote unquote girls' comics, because these days comics aren't gendered in the way that they were, you know, even in the 80s. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on what that legacy means now for a revival title like Tammy and Ginty, and how perhaps your stories either plug into that or move on from that.
I mean, I was very lucky that the editor on Tammy and Ginty actually sent me a lot of the old Tammy and Ginty stories, and I'm only saying this because I'm running out of ways that I can say it in conversation, but it was a little bit before my time, the Tammy and Ginty original series, so I hadn't really read a lot of them. But what I totally agree when you say it's all about character, but what struck me about all the different characters, all the different main protagonists, is that they're very, you know, that whole, the improv rule, the sort of yes and, they were all very yes and. They were all, you know, sometimes really horrible things would happen to them, like England would flood and she'd get lost from her parents and she'd just be like, okay, what can we do? Let's have a think. And it's just like, holy cow, okay. And it's not that they, but they still seemed really real. Those characters seemed so real, but they were so optimistic and they wanted to be better and they wanted to learn. And I loved that. And so I tried to put a lot of that into Tabitha. Conversely, I never really felt like I was writing for girls. I was just writing a story that I thought that, you know, young people might enjoy today. I wasn't, you know, trying to write a story that boys wouldn't like. I don't know. I find it hard to write. I tend to just write things and then send them to my editor, and my editor tells me who they're for. obviously, on this occasion, I did have to think about my demographic. But so yeah, that was kind of yeah. And going back to the way I write, it is very character driven. So I wanted to put some of the energy of those characters into my character, but other than that, I kind of just went with it.
I mean, sorry, Ram. Sorry.
I was going to say, well, like I did research as well, and I totally love like Bran and the Floods, and
that's the one.
It's really, it's almost like it's kind of ahead of its time in a way, because it's almost like the whole Greta Thunberg type thing, but like in the 70s. And then there was Ellen on Easy Street, which is really funny about class and stuff like that. And I dug the satirical side of it, and I thought I would just do that, but more about the internet. But I think the marketplace now, like if you look at stuff like Lumberjanes and what Boom is doing, and just like going into like comic shows now and just seeing what's out there, it's like the whole gender lines or whatever completely gone. And yeah, I just feel like just try to tell stories that appeal to everybody. But even though I still think it's important to have female lead characters, because I kind of think there is kind of a lack of that in the mainstream.
Mm.
I would say. Especially like the whole idea like behind having the new Catgirl be mixed race as well, like I kind of felt like there needed to be sort of like a whole demographic that in girls comics and not just like white characters. But
it's interesting the points you're both raising about these characters and the settings they find themselves in. For me, it's felt, particularly over the last sort of 10-15 years, that what we took to be the values and the ideas and the structures and the characters of girls' comics have now been embodied in what we consider to be YA comics, or, you know, non-mainstream comics, you know, basically not non-superhero stuff.
I was going to say, like, YA comics are the biggest selling comics now, aren't they? Like, Reign of Tug.
So there is
going for and
that kind of stuff. Yeah, well, it just feels like the landscape has changed, but has actually kind of come back round to where British comics were in the late 70s and early 80s, where you know, you've got Pat Mills creating things like Jinty, and we did a panel, I think it was either San Diego or New York, where Zach Davison, who's a manga translator in the States, I'd fed him a load of these collections, and it absolutely blew his mind, because he went, this is manga, you know, this is every setting, every hobby. You know, you've got something like Concrete Surfer, Sugar Jones, Friend of the Floods, every subject you could imagine just being put out there, and it's all about character. And I guess what I want to ask is what do you feel, looking interesting now, what do you feel good comics is? What values do you think good comics embody? And is this something that things like the Tammy and Jinty special and the kind of stories you want to tell, do they plug into that?
I mean, I dig story, but I think, like, I think character is the most important. And I think those comics are really had really strong characters and had really strong arcs, compared to the Boys comics, who seemed quite balls to the wall and two-dimensional in character. And I think a lot of the Girls comics kind of like seeped into the Boys comics in a sense, like quote unquote Boys comics, I should say. The characters are a bit more three-dimensional. You can see a little bit of vulnerability, maybe, I don't know, that kind of stuff. But I just think maybe it's kind of weird, because maybe like we're in the same sort of place socially and politically as we were in the 70s with all that turmoil. And I think maybe people have just want to read more stories, and maybe, yeah, I don't know why it kind of fell out.
I've kind of lost sight of the question, but I'll,
I know,
I'm going to say what I was going to say anyway. I think I just keep thinking about when I was growing up, like these stories would have been really useful for me, because when I was growing up, like comics to me were just superhero comics. I didn't really have a lot of comics about girls put in front of me. And because of that, I just didn't think they were for me. I didn't really get the whole superhero thing. I didn't see myself in them. All these sort of, they were sort of two-dimensional characters. They're very simple. Which is fine to get a story across. That's, you know, a useful thing. But I kind of needed these comics about, you know, girls with sort of messy emotions and girls that were a weird mix of things, and girls that were scared about this but brave about this, and were good at this but dreadful at this other thing. And, you know, I think, obviously I can't talk for everyone, but when I was a kid, I felt like I was being pulled in so many different ways. I had all these teachers wanting me to be good at different things, and other grown-ups saying, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I had no idea. And I felt like everyone else was this, you know, had it all together and had this very simple idea of what they wanted to do. And I just felt like this big broken jigsaw puzzle that where none of the pieces would fit together. And of course, you know, and then you grow up and you see that everyone's like that. Everyone's messy and no one has everything worked out. But it would have been really nice as a kid to read these stories about these fantastic stories, but about very, very believable, messy people. I think that, so I guess I'm trying to recreate that a little bit, and to sort of say to people now that were my age, sort of say, hey, it's okay not to have everything worked out. Read this cool story. And yeah, and just, I hope that helped a little bit with them.
Weirdly, you kind of got that in those like 60s Spider-Man comics where like Peter Parker will have like whole neuroses about, I've got to, you know, pay for my mum's my grandma's medication, and I've got to go on a date, and as well as being a superhero kind of thing. And that kind of fell out, didn't it? And, and it was, yeah. But I kind of like that whole raw kind of.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Kind of characters kind of thing.
It's interesting that you're both people who've made your own comics. you know, I don't know how you both came to it. I guess that's the first part of my question. How did you come to be making your own comics? But also, whether that is a consequence of not necessarily having seen yourself in comics you were reading when you were younger, whether there was a desire for you to tell stories like that. I guess we'll start off with how did you come to be creating your own stuff?
Well, for me, I grew up an avid comics reader, but it never really occurred to me that it could be something that I could do. It felt like comics were like created by some machine somewhere or in America or something like that. And it wasn't until maybe like 10 years ago, I was like an avid reader of Kate Beaton's live journal, which she put all her comics stuff, and she was going to have a show at Queen Mary's at like a small press thing. And I've never gone to a small press thing ever. And going there, like, completely, like, blew my mind. Because it was almost like she was, like, next to her was, like, John Ellison, there was Mark Ellerby, there was Joe DC, and, like, the whole, like, crew kind of thing. And, like, it was a completely different atmosphere. It was, like how I describe it is, like, somebody who grew up listening to like 60s rock, like Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, whatever, and thought, oh, if I'm going to be in a band, I'm just going to be practicing arpeggios and scales in my bedroom for 5 years, and then I'll start a band. And then suddenly go to your first punk show and be like, fuck, like there's like two chords, three chords if you're lucky. People telling, like, there's this dude who told, like, there was a comic where this guy just like done strips based on his text messages. There was this like woman who's like doing like Kay Miller type comics, and she's like in her 50s, and it's like stories that it felt like folk art. And it's like, I mean, I love the scene now, but it's a lot more professional now than it was back then. Back then you look around and be like, whoa, there's like, it's all over the place. And the weird thing about like small press as well, there's people who make comics for like 3 years and they completely disappear. They're like, wow, like there's a few people who like keep doing it and stay on. So it's all like this sort of like weird folk art type, I don't know, vibe. Don't mind me with my hand. But like it's like this weird, yeah. But I was really blown away by that, and it took me about a couple of years after that to then start thinking, you know what, I might start making my own comics. And what I did was, I thought, okay, I don't know where my strengths are, so what I'll do, I'll make two comics. The first comic is going to be like three short Future Shock type storylines, and I'll find three artists to draw them. And the second one, I'll write and draw myself. So I went into Gosh Comics, looked at the small press bit, like the artists, and like emailed them. I was like, what's your page rate? And they're like, they thought I was tricking them. They're like, what do you mean page rate? Like, no. But like, I just thought, because I was like, I was completely not part of the whole comic scene. I just like thought, oh, you know, artists, you pay them. And I saved up. I made the first comic. And the second comic, I thought, okay, if I'm going to write and draw this, I'll do something really personal. It'd be sort of like about my childhood, like come to the UK, like a refugee and all that, and make that as a really like, but instead of making it like a really depressing sort of like raw sort of reportage type thing, I'll tell like this really zany, the Wes Anderson-y type story about a boy who basically, there's a kid who joins his, a boy who's from like a really homogenous, like all white like school, and this kid joins his class, and he's like a refugee, and he's like completely different atmosphere, and he brings this like color to like this school, and then his family gets deported, and it's almost like a sad sort of story punchline at the end. but it's almost sort of like, but yeah, it's almost like that. And I did those two comics. And the second comic, that the comic that I wrote and drew myself, got like nominated for a British Comic Award, which was really cool. It was like the only self-published one on a shortlist. And that really encouraged me. And I did this, another connection of short stories that an Editech Rebellion read and liked and got me to pitch for this. And that's my story. Rambly.
No, it's a story.
Rachel, what oh, sorry, Ramsey.
No, I was just going to say, I remember like reading like Rachel's stuff and like timidly going to her table and picking up all her stuff, office like comedy about an arsonist, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah, I guess I had similar... Well, I mean, when I figured out I wanted to do comics, I was immediately very disheartened because I was like, well, you have to be Marvel or DC. Those are the only two comics things that you can be. And then again, like Ramsey, the more I looked at the industry and how different and varied it is, I came to the conclusion that actually I could just do this myself. And I could, you know, I could put together a comic and do a very low print run at my local printers and trundle along to London with my little suitcase and see how I do. And I did all right. And that was sort of the start of it. And yeah, my very first Comic-Con was like London MCM. So I really chucked myself in the deep end. And yeah, but just sort of soaked everything up. And I left that first convention thinking, okay, there's no way I'm not letting this be my career now. And yeah, it was just that. And, you know, once you do get picked up by publishers, it's very useful having self-published things because they will know that you know how to do everything and you know how much work goes into this. Like, you know, the design, the marketing, the distribution, the talking to the printers about, you know, paper weights and things. I don't know what I was doing. I was just like, I just want a book. I didn't know all these numbers and, you know, and coloring and bleed and whether you need staples or whether you can have a spine and all these things. And it is a lot. You have to be good at a lot of things, or you at least have to learn a lot of things very quickly to make your own book. But, you know, publishers will be impressed by that. So there's no point waiting to get picked up by a publisher. You might as well, if you've got a story in you, just go for it. And then you'll get noticed once you've done the first one.
We were super lucky as well. Like at the time we started making comics, it was like the digital comics printing boom, kind of, because like it got a lot cheaper to print it like in the 2010s than it was in the 2000s.
Yes.
So it's kind of like the technology caught up, and like there's a whole boom of indie creators.
Yeah, and I think there's still a bit of that. You know, I think small press is still in a bit of a renaissance, you know, because the big publishers have had to, you know, do pencils down, whereas we're small enough to just keep going. So we can just keep on keeping on.
With your experience, Rachel, of making your own comics, I guess you get to the point where you are picked up by publishers like Titan, like ourselves. Is there a sense of, in any way, and I'm not saying yay or nay on this, but of you feeling you have to change at all in order to quote unquote fit in with kind of mainstream comics, or I guess ultimately we're hiring you because of the work that we know that you've done?
Yeah, I was about to say that. I mean, yeah, there's a bit more pressure, I guess, to, because, you know, there's going to be more eyes on it before it gets published. But yeah, at the end of the day, you're hiring me because of what I do. So it'd be silly for me to be like, oh, I'm going to draw in a different style this time. And yeah, get like super realistic because you've hired me because I draw big googly eyes on people. Like, you must like that. So I'll carry on doing that. But yeah, I don't really, I just hope I get better with each project I do. So I don't go like, I'm going to put more effort into this and less effort into this. I think I just try my best with everything and hope I get better. That's kind of my life motto. Try my best. Maybe things will be all right.
It's that thing about once you have a voice, once you develop a voice by doing something, then it becomes extremely valuable to you as a creator, because that's you know, that's what you do, that's the public persona, that's the work that you put out there. And I think reading the Tammy and Ginty special, it did really feel that both the stories had a weight behind them of, oh, we got this, you know, we know what we're doing, kind of thing. Ramsey, how confident were you going into this project in the first place?
This project?
Yeah.
I think Small Press Publishing helped a lot, because I already had a lot of stories underneath my belt. And I'm not going to lie, it is quite daunting, your first professional experience. But Keith was so great to talk to, and there was not much, after that initial conversation, there was not much editing. And I cut my teeth writing five-page, six-page stories. So to get 14 pages was a larger real estate of stories. So I could open things up a bit. The British tradition, I thought, was quite interesting. It'd be weird writing an American comic. So I remember going to the British Museum's Comics Unmasked exhibition, where they had a lot of girls' comics and 2000 AD and stuff. And the idea of having this sadistic type the subversive side of those comics is very British, and to look at stuff a lot of the British creators who go over to America, they kind of lose a bit of that subversiveness, because it's maybe a bit too hardcore for Americans. But I kind of leaned into that in a very soft way with this comic, and yeah, that's it. I'm a better creator than a talker. I'm like, kind of just like.
But yeah, let's talk a little bit about the artwork on this, because Yishan Lee on Rachel's strip and Elkis Nova on Ramsey's strip. This feels like exactly the kind of style you would expect to see in a girl's comics of the 1970s and 80s, if they were updated. You know, it feels so rounded and so grounded, as it were. I guess, Rachel, what was your reaction to seeing Yishan's artwork for the first time?
I knew it was going to be good, so I was ready, but I wasn't ready for it to be as magical as it was. I did a little cry. Every page I got, it was like getting a gift. It was amazing. I mean, Yishan's bonkers talented, and I knew that. But geez Louise, she brought everything to life so much. And look, I'm getting upset now. It was amazing. It was just that first page with the school in the background, and then and Pippa Boland's on colours as well. She's been in the, it feels like Pippa's been in the industry for 5 minutes, and now she's ruling the colouring world. And yeah. she should, because she's got so good so quickly. I don't understand. I think she might be a vampire. But I was very, very pleased. Very, very happy with the pages.
I mean, I was really pleased. I followed my artist on Instagram, and he posted snippets in his Instagram story, and it was like having these tiny little morsels every day, you're looking at it, going, oh, this is really great. But it was a really cool experience for me, in a sense that usually when I work with an artist, I tactics than myself. So this is like completely, I didn't have like completely no control. So it's sort of like giving myself up to the universe and be like, you know, fingers crossed. And it came out so brilliantly. I was dead chuffed. And it's made me a lot more braver, because I think a lot of small press people like are writer artists, and they're a bit cagey about giving the power, like, you know, like working with other artists. And I kind of see it as like a lot more interesting, because you're so in your head when you're drawing it yourself, you know exactly what it is and there's no surprise. Whereas like to get it back in a completely different way, you kind of need a few seconds to adjust, and then you're like, yeah, this is kind of cool, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that.
It's something that's come up on the podcast before about the element of trust.
Yes.
That when you're a writer artist, you know, you just trust yourself to do it. But when there's another human being involved, either you go crazy and just try and control them, which is a bad thing, or you trust them to do their best, and for it to a synthesis of those two things to kind of come together and be great. But it's you know, what was great to see on this special was just, you know, the tone of the stories and the tone of the artwork just seemed to sync really, really nicely, you know.
Yeah. I mean I can trust you, Shan, anyway, with you know everything. But like I kind of, when I was writing the script for her, I can totally see where people get a bit controlling, though, because, you know, I was a bit like, okay, I can see it's a very slippery slope, because you could be like, okay, there's this dining hall, it's very grand and Victorian, there's a big long table. You know what, here's several reference pictures for the table. And the windows, you know, they're like, actually, if you read this book, they're like this chapter in the book, and it can very quickly get out of hand. So I was quite vague about the settings with Yushan, because I know she's super duper good at them anyway. I just said, oh, it's the big old Victorian room. What I do tend to write is how the characters are feeling as well. So I'll try and stay away from saying, this person has a big smile on their face. Instead, I'll say, this person's thinking this right now, because I know Yushan would do a better job of getting that expression out anyway. So yeah, that's kind of the only difference I put when I'm writing for someone else. When I'm writing for me, I'll just say she's got a stupid smile on her face. But yeah, when I'm writing for someone else, I'll try and be a bit more trusting that way and be like, okay, here's how they're feeling. How do you think their face would be? Like, I don't know.
I mean, how long did it take you to get to that sort of level? Like when your first writing job, you must have been like, whoa.
I mean, I still do get a bit scared. It makes it easier because I know Yushan, and if I know that if she doesn't understand something I've written, she will just email me and be like, what do you mean, Rachel? I'm quite lucky in that I have written for someone I haven't known, but I've at least had their email address and been like, oh, please email if anything doesn't make sense, or if I'm being too overbearing, or if I'm not giving you enough. And, you know, it's just, it's less that you stop feeling like that. It's just you get a bit better at communication with the artist that you're working with, and just making sure that they know you're available, I think, is the most important thing to do. If you're sending like 8 pages of stuff for one panel, you may be doing too much. And it's just having that kind of, and I think it's good because you draw as well, like you kind of know what you would need. And you can think about it both ways. I think it must be more difficult if you just do the writing, not just if you don't do the drawings as well. It must be hard to imagine what an artist would need, and I totally get that. But yeah, I think we're quite lucky in that we chop and change, so we can empathise with the other person.
Thank you so much to Rachel and to Ramsey for taking the time to chat. Hope you enjoyed that. It's fascinating to hear new creators for the House of Tharg talking a little bit about what comics mean to them, and particularly the Tammy and Jinty special, which is out next week. Do pick it up, whether you think you're into girls comics or not. I think it's a fantastic read, and it's really nice to see different ways of storytelling, different characters really coming through. We'll be back in a week's time for more from the 2008 Thrillcast lockdown tapes. So make sure you stay safe and spread the word of Thrill Power. And until next time, Earthlets, Splendid Verthrig.
Alert! 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 Thrill power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com.